Hello, welcome everyone. My name is Jessica Zell-Biddle from AVAC, and we're excited to have you on the HIV curriculum webinar series today. And we're very excited, actually, to be joined by Dr. Priyanka Ipredi from Johns Hopkins. And so we're just going to give a minute for some additional individuals to join. We are at the top of the hour, but we will... Hi, all. Good morning, good afternoon. Good
the evening. Conference has been muted.
Great. So, Priyanka, are you are on the call? I'm just going to go ahead and unmute your line. Priyanka, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, great. Welcome.
Sure.
So we're just dialing in now, and so we're getting everything ready.
Sure.
So I just want to once again welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to this HIV curriculum webinar on pediatric HIV cure research. We're very excited to be joined by Dr. Priyanka Ipredi today from Johns Hopkins. And so as I mentioned, we'll just start in a moment. People are just getting dialed in, getting online. So we are excited to have everyone, and we're really looking forward to today's webinar. So just as a little back. I heard she worked in Dr. Prasad's lab there. She also is a Master of Science in Public Health, also from Johns Hopkins. And so we're very excited to have her on the call today. We've been hearing a lot about HIV cure research, and especially on the road to Durban, but really haven't heard a lot about pediatric HIV cure. So we're really excited today to go into a little bit more depth. This is hopefully going to be quite an interactive webinar, and so we do want individuals to be able to participate. You can participate by using your chat function. So it's that little box in the lower left-hand corner. You can also participate over the phone by hitting *7 to unmute your line and *6 to remute. We are recording this call, and we do hope to put it online. So we do ask for you to participate mostly through the chat function. Great. And so, Dr. Ipredi, I think that we can go ahead and begin. I will go ahead and move the slides for you.
Okay. All right. So, hello, everyone. As Jessica mentioned, my name is Priyanka, and I did my PhD training in the laboratory of Dr. Prasad, where I was working on cure research in perennially infected infected children. So Dr. Deborah Prasad is the scientific chair of the HIV Cure Scientific Committee of the IMPACT Group. And our lab heavily focuses on prospects of long-term remission, which is the control of virus HIV in absence of antiretroviral therapy, and also in cure research in children. So today, the main objectives of this talk are to understand the current state of HIV cure research in pediatric populations, to summarize the challenges of working with the pediatric populations, and to explain the major cases of virologic remission in perinatally infected children. So, how do we define cure?
So, once again, we'd love you to chat in your answers. So, how do people on the phone or on the web think that we define keywords?
Again, we want this session to be very interactive, as Jessica mentioned, so please feel free to give your comments or pose any questions to me. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. So we have an answer in the chat function as no virus.
That is one of the definitions of cure.
Not transmittable. You can't pass it on.
That's also one of the definitions. Yes, that's correct.
No need to take meds, non-infectious, healthy.
Yes, that's a type of a cure, also deemed as functional, which I will talk about shortly. All right, so I'll kind of walk everyone through the definitions of cure in the field. So the cure can be defined in with two broad strokes. The first is it can be defined as a sterilizing cure or eradication. So in this type of cure, HIV is completely removed from every cell in your body. So the person is basically free of the virus, and there is no need for any medications in the future. So the second type of cure is a functional cure, or also termed as remission. So in this state of cure, HIV is not completely gone from all the cells in the body, meaning you can still find bits and pieces of the HIV's DNA in the infected host. However, all the requirements from the previous definitions are met. One of the main definitions of this cure is that there is actually no need for any medication, meaning the infected person can actually maintain virus suppression in absence of any antiretroviral drugs. However, since HIV is not completely gone from all the cells in the body, HIV does have the potential to resurface, leading to detectable levels of virus in the blood in future. So why do you think HIV is so hard to cure compared to other infectious diseases? What are your thoughts?
So again, you can hit *7 to unmute your line. So HIV high is coming in on the chat.
Yes, that's one of the main mechanisms why HIV is hard to cure, because it hides in cells of the body.
Because it attaches itself to cells and replicates.
That's correct. So one of the reasons why it's so hard to cure HIV is, as someone just mentioned earlier, HIV actually enters the cells in your body, and it actually injects itself, its DNA, into the DNA of the host. So once the viral DNA is integrated into the host DNA, it's very hard for the HIV to be cleared out of the cells. And the only way a person is deemed cure of HIV is by the clearance of all the infected cells in the body. So the beauty of the HIV infections, one of the beauties is that most of the cells that are actually infected are cleared from the body of infected host by two mechanisms. The first one being infected cells are cleared by the immune system of the host, and second is the cells just die. The infected cells just die due to the ill effects of the virus. However, a few infected cells that do become long-lived, which I'll state as resting memory cells going on. So the collection of these long-lived memory cells is called the latent reservoir. So some of you may have heard of the reservoir. It is a place where HIV hides out in the body, and the use of antiretroviral drugs can be used to clear these infected cells because the HIV is actually hiding inside the cells of the body. So once the HIV enters the immune cells, it actually integrates into the cell's DNA, so which is the cell's control center for reproducing itself. So it basically hijacks the replication process, getting the cell to make more virus particles instead of more cells. So most cells realize that they are infected and they will die quickly or send out chemical signals to be killed, as I mentioned earlier. But sometimes these cells do turn into resting memory cells and are very long-lived. So memory CD4 cells, which are most which helps the body to fight off foreign invaders, they have already seen. So the beauty of these cells is that they're extremely long-lived, and hence they allow your body to remember what infections or what vaccines you've encountered during your life to protect you from these infections in the future. However, on the downside, once the HIV infection is established in these memory CD4 T cells, it actually lives in these cells for a very long time. And this is precisely the reason why it is so challenging to cure HIV once these cells are seeded in the long-lived CD4 T cell, memory CD4 T cells. So the resting cells can be reactivated at a later time point. And when this occurs, as shown in the figure here, HIV DNA becomes activated, and these cells now becomes factory for producing new viruses. So if this occurs while an individual is taking effective ART, virus particles cannot infect new cells. However, if this happens in absence of treatment, in absence of antiretroviral therapy, then the virus quickly resurfaces and the virus can be detected using clinical assays. So importantly, when patients stop taking their antiretroviral drugs, these virus particles can pretty much lead to rebound viremia and reignite the infection. So there are various approaches to curing HIV that's been kind of accepted in the field of adult HIV infection. So the first approach is to use the drugs that basically reawaken these sleeping HIV-infected cells or the resting cells. And drugs like latency-reversing agents can be used for that purpose. The second method is to use genetic modification of your CD4 T cells so that the CD4 T cells become resistant to HIV infection, and that this can be achieved using zinc finger nucleases. The third approach is actually by boosting your own immune system so that your own immune cells are better equipped to kill the infected cells. And this can be achieved by using therapeutic vaccines and also broadly neutralizing antibodies. The fourth and the most promising avenue to date is to cure HIV is the use of very early antiretroviral treatment to limit the size of the latent reservoir that poses as the main barrier to cure. So of these four approaches, one of the most promising avenue that we have a lot of result data on is the use of early ART to achieve long-term remission and cure in children. So there are like stark differences between HIV infection in adults and children. One of the main differences is in terms of the immune system. So infants have a very unique immune system that basically discourages very robust inflammatory response to an infectious agent. So this state of dampened immune system in infants is one of the reasons why infants experience more infections than adults. Infants also have very fewer long-lived memory CD4 T cells. Recent research has shown that actually increased immune activation after birth can actually increase the risk of acquiring HIV infection. And so adults have immune system. In contrast, adults have immune system that mount more robust immune responses to infections. Hence, they are better adapted at quickly controlling the virus replication after infection. So adults also have increased long-lived memory CD4 T cells from long-term exposure to pathogens. And hence, this may be the reason why they have a bigger pool of latent reservoir compared to infants. And they also have increased number of differentiated cells. So I would like to quickly walk you through the basics of perinatal HIV infection. So perinatal HIV infection is basically the transmission of virus from an infected mother to the child. So the transmission of the virus from mother to the infant can occur in three routes. It can occur during pregnancy in utero. It can occur during the process of delivery by ingestion of infected fluids during the intermartum period, or it can occur during breastfeeding by the ingestion of infected breast milk during the postpartum period. So perinatal HIV infection is very unique than adult HIV infection because the timing of infection can actually be established. And this can be done by doing sequential HIV testing right after birth. So this is very hard to achieve in adults because usually the timing of exposure and infection is hard to establish unless the adults are strictly being monitored in a clinical setting. One of the unique aspects of perinatal HIV infection is the timing of exposure is known. And this allows for a timely intervention with a combination of antiretroviral drugs to basically stop replication of the virus and spread of the virus to different parts of the body. So what are the risk factors? So this is a question for the audience. What are the risk factors for mother-to-child transmission? What are your thoughts?
So the amount of virus?
Yes, that is one of the risk factors for transmission from mother to child. All right.
Where in the world they are, like if they have access to treatment?
Yes, that's correct. So the treatment, if a person is in treatment, that basically keeps the HIV viral load in check. And as someone just mentioned earlier, the amount of virus in an infected person is one of the main risk factors for transmission. So I'll just quickly go through the risk factors for mother-to-child transmission. One of them is knowledge of HIV status. Second is acquiring HIV infection during pregnancy. So during the primary course of infection, the viral loads in an infected person is very high. So if a pregnant woman acquires the infection during the course of pregnancy, then due to very high viral loads, the chances of transmission to the infant is actually very high. The other risks for transmissions are low CD4 count, high viral load, as someone just mentioned, maternal ART, and infant prophylaxis. It's also access to care and also stigma, seeking care. So it's actually very important to remember that mother-to-child transmission of HIV is preventable with currently available antiretroviral drugs. So this should be our primary focus. It just requires the mother knowing her HIV infection status, which requires testing during pregnancy. However, if a mother is negative, she needs to maintain barrier protection during pregnancy and the breastfeeding period. As I just mentioned earlier, the risk of pregnancy is much higher when infection is acquired during the pregnancy of breastfeeding period, as the viral load is very high during this primary infection. So ART during breastfeeding, it prevents transmission through the breast milk because it keeps the virus, the levels of the virus very low, undetectable. And formula feeding, when safe and affordable, it prevents further exposure to HIV. The risk of perinatal transmission during pregnancy and delivery is when the mother is not receiving any antiretroviral drug is actually fairly high. It ranges from 15% to 37%. Whereas when mother does receive antiretroviral therapy that suppresses viral load to undetectable levels, the risk of transmission is profoundly low, is as low as 1%. So we should definitely keep this in mind.
So, Dr. Upreti, there actually was a question that came in, which is, why is a low CD4 count a risk factor?
So low CD4 count is a risk factor because it's suggestive of that there is some kind of virus replication going on. So HIV infects and replicates primarily in CD4 T cells, and it kills the CD4 T cells. So the fact that the CD4 count is very low is suggestive of ongoing virus replication, which is suggestive of high viral loads. That's one of the main risk factors for transmission.
Great, thank you.
So, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of evidence from research that's showing that early antiretroviral therapy is life-saving. This was alluded from results from the SHARE trial back in 2008, where they showed that initiating early ART within 3 months of infection actually decreases mortality by 75% in the setting of a developing country. So early, so there is no question that the early ART is life saving, especially in context of perinatally infected infants. So there's more evidence coming out from other groups, including our lab, that early ART, it reduces the size of the latent reservoir. And reducing the size of these latent reservoir in the CD4 T cells in the memory CD4 T cells is actually the first step towards long-term remission. And this may actually permit functional cure, which I mentioned earlier, which is a type of cure where you can control the virus in absence of any antiretroviral treatment. So this promising finding coming from our group and others in field of perinatal HIV infection, that's basically showing that early and long continuous antiretroviral treatment given to perinatally infected infants can actually lead to continuous clearance of infected cells and may lead to a very small reservoir. So the promising finding based on, as shown in the data here, based on a small study on just 4 perinatally infected infants, as shown in the 4 graphs here, through adolescents of up to 14, from 14 to 20 years of age, where long-term virologic suppression since infancy It led to a continuous clearance of infected cells, resulting in a very small HIV reservoir. Also, there's recent evidence that's showing that the final reservoir size of these adolescents is actually much smaller than that of HIV-infected adults treated during ART for the same duration of time. So these results are very encouraging because they are showing that early ART and a long-term ART can actually really diminish, like really shrink the size of your HIV-infected cells. And this is encouraging because smaller your reservoir, meaning smaller your infected cells, the greater is the chance of achieving functional cure, which is the suppression of the virus in absence of treatment. So this is a schematic of timing of ART initiation on the left. I'm walking from left side to the right side. So it's showing the timing of ART initiation, the hypothesized size of the latent reservoir, the duration of remission following ART discontinuation, and the capacity of the reservoir to reestablish viremia. So in here we basically see that very early ART within a few days of infection can control replication of the virus, which will then allow for minimum HIV exposure and infection to the cells in the body. So smaller pool of these infected cells will actually allow for long-term remission, which is the control of virus in absence of ART, and will decrease the capacity to reestablish viremia. So on the other end of the spectrum, in absence of treatment, there will be continuous replication of the virus as shown in the last row. There will be continuous replication of the virus in absence of treatment, and so this leads to ongoing infection of new CD4 T cells in the host, which will lead to a very large pool of the latent reservoir. So this will decrease the duration of HIV remission, and it basically allows for continuous production of virus in the future. So I guess the summary of this slide is basically very early CART can reduce the size of these latent reservoir, and that basically allows for increases the chances of functional cure, which is the control of virus in absence of treatment. Which brings me to the case of the Mississippi child. Have any of you heard of the Mississippi child? Can you discuss what you've heard about the Mississippi child? All right, let me walk you briefly through the case of the Mississippi child, which is a case of perinatally infected infant that our lab was very involved in studying. So Mississippi child was HIV positive at birth. She started triple drug therapy within 30 hours of life after birth. Keep in mind, so this is in stark contrast to what happens in the real world. Usually, in a developing country setting, the time of antiretroviral treatment is usually around 2 to 3 months at best. So in contrast to that, this child actually was started on triple drug therapy within 30 hours of birth. However, this child was lost to follow-up and returned into care after 18 months of treatment. Child remained off of treatment with no detectable virus for 27 months. So this child was basically in remission for 27 months. So keep in mind, this is in stark contrast to what happens, what was seen with other HIV-infected infants, where the rebound usually happens quickly within just 2 to 3 weeks. So in contrast, this child was able to be in remission for 27 months. So in the case of Mississippi child, unfortunately, after 27 months of remission, the virus quickly rebounded, and hence antiretroviral treatment was promptly initiated in this child at 27 months post-treatment. So up until last year, this child was the only case of long-term remission in case of a perennially infected infant. So this child was, as I mentioned earlier, this child was born to an HIV-infected mother who was unaware of her status before giving birth. So within 24 hours of birth, the infant tested positive for HIV by two separate time points. So the doctors immediately began treating this child with three antiretroviral drugs within 30 hours of life. So at 18 months, the child stopped medication against the medical advice. And the child missed, after which the child was lost to follow-up, meaning the child missed several clinical visits. So when the child returned to the clinic at 23 months, the doctors and researchers were unable to find HIV in the child's blood, which was very novel at that time because the virus quickly rebounds, as I mentioned earlier, within 2 to 3 weeks of stopping treatment, but that was not the case in this context. So our lab studied multiple blood, multiple time points where we studied the blood in this infant to see if there were any HIV-infected cells. And basically, there was very minimum to very little amount of HIV DNA in this infant. Most importantly, during this time, during the levels of undetectable levels of HIV in the blood in this child maintained to be in remission, meaning was able to control virus in absence of any treatment. So, what can we learn from the Mississippi child? So this case is a proof, a principle that a sustained viral remission is possible. And early we hypothesized that early treatment, meaning like aggressive treatment within 30 hours of life with antiretroviral drugs, prevented a large viral reservoir from forming in the case of this child. However, the fact that this child rebounded after 27 months of remission, it suggests that even a very small amount of reservoir cells can reestablish infection, and that's what's so challenging about attaining cure in infants and even in adults. It's the formation of the latent reservoir. So there are other cases of pediatric virus suppression as well. The other case that our lab has been actually pretty involved in is the case of the Long Beach child. So this child started antiretroviral treatment even earlier than the Mississippi child. The child started ART within 4 hours of birth. There were undetectable HIV and immune responses to HIV in blood after more than 9 months. However, I would like to point this out that the child is still on ART and still remains to be followed up by researchers. So this case highlights that very early therapy can limit the size of the reservoir in early infancy. Because when our lab has studied for HIV-infected cells in the blood in this child, we have consistently found very low levels, almost undetectable levels of HIV DNA in the child's blood, suggesting that very early therapy can limit the reservoir in early infancy. Since the child is still on ART, it's unclear if the child is capable of long-term remission. Given other cases of rebound, there's a lot of ethical concerns with ART cessation, and this is something we will touch upon in the later part of this presentation. So besides the Mississippi child, there have been other cases of short-term virologic remission that have been reported. So in case of the Dublin child, as shown in the purple here, This child started ARDS immediately after birth and was on continuous ARDS for about 4 years. So the standard HIV diagnostic tests that were done in the child were the viral load assay and antibodies for HIV, which were both negative at 4 years. However, upon ARDS discontinuation, HIV was quickly detected within 8 days, within 2 weeks of ARDS cessation, which is what's typically seen in most of the treatment cessation studies. So another case of Canadian child, which is shown in green here, is that HIV, so this these children began ARDS very early, within 24 hours of birth, and ARDS was discontinued. However, HIV was quickly detected and rebounded within 2 weeks of ARDS cessation. The other case of a short-term virologic remission is a case of Milan child, or the Italian child, so as shown in orange here. This infant started ARDS within 4 days of birth, had undetectable HIV or immune responses to HIV in blood for 3 years. So after hearing the case of Mississippi child, doctors stopped ARDS and closely monitored this child. However, unfortunately, the HIV was detected within 2 weeks of ARDS cessation. So in contrast to these cases, Mississippi child, as shown in pink here, started ARDS within 30 hours of life, was in treatment for about 18 months, and so after cessation of treatment, this infant was in remission for about 2 years. Unfortunately, Mississippi child's virus rebounded after about 27 months of remission, but the rebounding HIV levels are actually pretty low, to about 16 copies per mil, in contrast to the other cases of short-term virologic remission in children. So what makes the Mississippi child so different than other cases of HIV remission in children? So there could be, so to summarize all of this, I've put all of the viral loads, ART initiation time, viral rebound in the table for you to look at. And so there are various factors that could make the Mississippi child very unique than rest of these cases of perinatally infected infants with short-term virologic remission. One of the factors could be stages of in utero infection. The other factor could be viral load of the mother. The other factor could be HIV exposure duration and viral load. It could also be the genetic differences in the immune response, ART adherence, and other co-infections. It could also be the size of the latent reservoir that's already established before initiation of ART. It could be the type of virus, and it could also be ART regimen and the dose of the drugs that's given to the mothers and the infants. So in 2013, HIV researchers in France have identified a unique group of individuals termed as post-treatment controllers. So these are a group of HIV-infected adults that were actually able to spontaneously control replication of the virus in absence of treatment when treatment was initiated early in the course of infection. So these individuals were able to achieve a state of remission without inheriting the good genes to control the virus. So I'll talk about these good genes in the next slide. So recently, the same researchers have identified a case of perinatally infected adolescents who has been able to control the virus for about 12 years in absence of treatment. So this is very exciting for the field. So this infant is also termed as a Visconti child. So this child initiated ART at 3 months of age. She had two separate episodes of ART non-adherence in the second year that resulted in viral rebound. So ART discontinued a third time with sustained virus suppression. smaller viral blips were observed at 14 years of age and 13 years of age. However, most importantly, this child remains a post-treatment controller, meaning this child has been able to control the virus in absence of treatment for over 12 years now. And this finding was reported in the IAS last year, I believe, and it's very exciting for the field. So there are some adults, HIV infected adults, that have the genetic good genes, a genetic makeup to inherently control the HIV replication in absence of antiretroviral drugs. So one of these, one type of these adults are called elite controllers. So these individuals can control the virus sometimes to undetectable levels without needing any antiretroviral drugs. And this is because they have a very robust immune response from the CD8 T cells that basically keeps the virus in check. They are generally, they also have very high, regular CD4 and CD8 counts. The other type of adults are the long-term non-progressors. So these individuals basically, they may have low levels of virus, but they also maintain a normal CD4 count. And most importantly, even in absence of treatment, they do not have disease progression to AIDS. So the cases of perinatal remission, the cases that I just mentioned earlier, all of them have one common theme, and that is that all of the cases started out within hours of birth and had very low HIV reservoir, and none had detectable HIV DNA that's in the blood that was measured by standard clinical ultrasensitive assays. And none of these infants had immune response to HIV. And those who actually stopped ART experienced viral rebound, with the Mississippi child being a unique case. So there are various ethical considerations that needs to be accounted for in cure research. So the ethical consideration of functional cure regimen for neonates are as follows. Very early treatment with aggressive drug regimen can have toxic side effects, especially on the neonates. Most importantly, to study the effects of early therapy and remission, we would have to take infants off of CART. And this can have some other side effects, like it can lead to drug-resistant forms of the virus. It may also increase the size of the reservoir, which can further preclude attaining cure. So all of these things needs to be they need to be considered while thinking about attaining functional cure, which as of now can only be tested by taking the infants off of treatment. So what are the other ethical considerations? Any of you want to chime in? What are your thoughts?
So remember, everyone, you can hit *7 to unmute your line, or please use the chat function. So somebody said the frequency of testing.
Yep, that is one of the main considerations, because you wouldn't know if the child has rebounded unless the child is in clinical care and is constantly being monitored for the viral loads to see if the child has rebounded. That's great. All right, so I'll briefly go through the other ethical considerations. It could be one of the main ones. It could be during consent, during labor and delivery. It could be pressure to discontinue ART. Drug fatigue in adolescence, as adherence is a huge issue in HIV-infected individuals, perinatally infected individuals, because as of now, once an infant is deemed to be HIV-infected, they have to take antiretroviral drugs for their lifetime. So adherence is a huge issue, especially during the adolescence period. Other ethical considerations is the frequency of viral rebound assessment, like someone just mentioned, and ability to emotionally support parents as well, because it is a having an HIV-infected individual is a huge responsibility on the individual itself and also the family. So there are other remaining questions that needs consideration as well. For example, how early is early enough for ART initiation? Like in the case of Mississippi baby, the ART was initiated within 30 hours of life. However, is that even a practical and attainable goal globally? As I just mentioned earlier, a recent paper published by Katie Sutcliffe showed that in Zambia, it took about 2 to 3 months to get the test results back for HIV diagnosis. So globally, we have to think that how early is early enough, realistically, for ART initiation. The other question is, what biomarkers should be used to indicate CART cessation in HIV remission? So all the biomarkers, like for all of these infants on that were treated very early with ART, we saw that most of the biomarkers for HIV infection were negative when we measured the HIV antibody levels, HIV immune responses in CD4 cells and CD8 T cells, HIV DNA and RNA in the blood. All of them were negative. Or very close to the limit of lower limit of detection of the assays. So what we really need in the field are like new biomarkers that are much more sensitive to measure the HIV reservoir in infants. And also, the next question is, what duration remission is appropriate to refer as cured? So the only individual that's deemed cured of HIV is the burden patient, where we've not detected any HIV DNA in the blood or other organs, like gut. So I think the Berlin patient has been in remission for over close to 10 years now. And it's been accepted by the field that the Berlin patient is cured. How about other cases? Especially cases in the case of perinatally infection individual. So that's something that the field needs to tackle on. So there are various challenges in the field of HIV in infants. So one of the main challenges is the implementation of early ART. So as I mentioned earlier, early infant HIV diagnosis, particularly in low-income setting, it takes a long amount of time in the scale of 2 to 3 months. So So our studies from our lab has shown that by 2 to 3 months of age, actually a large pool of HIV infection is already established in infants. Hence, treatment at 2 to 3 months of age is too late. So there's actually a great need for point-of-care and diagnostic tests that can be implemented in a low-income setting that allows for timely diagnosis and CART initiation of treatment in these infants. One of the major challenges in infants is the limit on the blood volumes. So a lot of these assays, to get to a very good sensitivity, it requires a lot of cells and a lot of blood. So this is a huge limitation in infants because we are always limited by the amount of blood we can draw from these kids, unlike adults where this is not a problem. So this, so studying HIV in infants is inherently, it comes with a lot more challenges than studying HIV in adults. That's something we should keep in mind. There's also challenges of treatment cessation and the ethical issues surrounding the issue of treatment cessation. One of the main challenges is the reservoir, studying the reservoir other than blood. I mean, so blood is the most easily accessible type of cells, so we can, it's much more easier to study the HIV in the blood compared to different organs of the body, like gastrointestinal tract, spleen, brain, etc. The sampling is a huge challenge in other bodily sites, especially in infants. So conclusions for perinatally infected infants is that as of now, we know that very early ART can be used to achieve very low reservoir size, which may allow for longer-term remission. So this is biologically, very early ART is biologically possible, at least in a developing country setting, as shown by the case of the Mississippi child and the Long Beach child. So there's a potential for widespread global implementation given existing structure for delivery of PMTCT. There's potential to further lengthen the HIV remission and also encourage post-treatment control in the field of perinatal HIV infection. So the conclusions for older children and youth is that there's a new immunotherapeutic interventions. There are new interventions that are actually safe and may be plausible for HIV and are actually plausible for HIV-infected adults. So some of these will have the advantage of low reservoir size and form and may help for long-term virologic control. So most will benefit from the capacity of immune response to reconstitute due to the thymic reserves in the adolescents. So with this, I would like to conclude this presentation. I'd like to acknowledge a lot of funding bodies for this work and research in our lab. And I would like to take questions. Give you time for questions, right, Jessica?
Yes. So great. Thank you so much, Dr. Petty. So there has been a couple of questions that have come in on the chat function. The first is about frequency of testing. So if an HIV-positive mother gives birth and the birth of the child does not have the virus, how often should the child be tested?
So I think that's a great question. So in context of a developed country like in the U.S., if a child is born to an HIV-infected mother, I think the child is tested immediately following birth, and I think within a couple of weeks of birth. But in developing country, HIV-infected mothers do not breastfeed, so there's no risk of postpartum transmission. Hence, there would be no need for sequential testing during the postpartum period if there is a prior negative HIV result on the child. However, in context of a developing country setting where HIV-infected mothers breastfeed, there is a continuous exposure of HIV to the infant through the breast milk. Hence, HIV infants should undergo sequential HIV testing during that postpartum period. So the frequency of testing depends on the context, the setting of infection.
Great. Thank you so much. So before I ask the next question, once again, you can hit *7 to unmute your line if anybody would like to ask a question of themselves. Okay, well, once again, another question came in, which was just about, does the Mississippi child have any of the special genes that you mentioned earlier?
That's a great question. So that's something our lab has been working on in detail. So the Mississippi child does not have like a protective HLA gene, B57, which basically is found in the thing is found in the elite controllers in adults. So the Mississippi child does not have the so-called good genes to control the infection. What we think is happened in the Mississippi child is that very early treatment basically stopped the replication of the virus, and it stopped the spread of the virus and infection of new cells to different parts of the body. That's primarily one of the reasons we think allowed for a long-term remission. However, there could be other type of immune cells, like NK cells, that may have allowed for this long period of remission. However, we have not tested that yet. That's something that our lab is working on right now. We don't have the answers to that as of now, but that's a great question.
Great. So the next question is just, what is the difference between the Visconti child and the Mississippi child?
So I guess I'll start with the similarities. So both of the infants started ART pretty early on during the course of infection. Well, Mississippi child started actually ART pretty very early, within 30 hours of life, whereas the Visconti child started ART around 3 months of life. So, I mean, on a broad sense of things, it's 3 months is pretty early to start ART. So I know the Visconti child doesn't have the protective, like the good genes, like the protective HLA-B57 allele. So what the researchers are looking into are the other immune cells, like including NK cells, if they played any role in controlling the virus. And that's one of the main questions in the Mississippi child as well, the role of other immune cells in controlling the virus. So that's something that's being actively studied right now.
Great. And so just to be a thing of time, about one more question. Mm-hmm. And the one came in with, do most children of HIV-infected mothers receive nevirapine after birth? Mm-hmm. And does this interfere with the research being conducted?
So I am not sure how giving nevirapine would interrupt with the research being conducted, actually. I mean, I don't think that would be the case.
Great. So great. So given that, I think that, once again, you can hit *7 to unmute your line, but we are at the top of the hour. And so I just want to thank Dr. Preddy for conducting this webinar and spending an hour with us. And this has been really great, and I know that I have learned a lot. And I just want to also encourage everybody to join us tomorrow at 11 a.m., where Dr. Gail Henderson from the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill will be discussing operationalizing ethics and really focusing in on informed consent. So thank you so much, and enjoy your morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on where you are in the world.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you all.
Bye.
This conference will now be disconnected. Goodbye.